I remember my parents, and I just think about how many people I have met throughout my cancer journey and throughout my domestic violence journey who have not made it. And I feel so blessed and grateful to be here that that's what keeps me going. When I want to raise the, you know, white flag and give up, I just remind myself, this is a gift that you're here.
Hi, I'm Jason Ramsden, and I believe we can all work on leading a more positive and intentional life. And this show details my journey by sharing my learning, stories, and conversations with guests. If you want to lead a more intentional life focused on being the best you possible, please subscribe today. Now, let's get into today's episode. Hello, my positivity posse, and welcome to a special post-Thanksgiving episode of Positivity on Fire. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of chatting with Dana Lawson, a marine biologist, educator, outdoors woman, and founder of Unbounded Horizons, an organization dedicated to using recreational therapy to guide adult survivors of domestic abuse toward the path to independence and ultimately survival. A survivor of domestic abuse herself, Dana is also a cancer survivor and an above-the-knee amputee. She is continually pushing herself to rediscover the unbounded horizons of her own potential and is one of the most powerful stories I've shared to date. It is one of determination, inspiration, and triumph. I hope you enjoy today's episode. Dana, welcome to the show. So good to see you.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting to be here.
I know. I'm glad we finally had the chance to connect after a couple of miscues there, but I'm excited for the conversation today.
Definitely. It's all about the flexibility, right?
That's right. That's a mindset. Flexibility is a mindset. So I appreciate you bringing that to the table. Well, I'm super excited that JP actually connected us together, at least on social. And it's been interesting for me to kind of follow your story. First of all, JP said, "Oh, you two are both really positive people. Let me connect you together." And I started to watch and read your story, and then especially over the month of October. And like, I don't have positivity down like you have positivity down, based upon your life story. I mean, you're the trifecta of things that could go wrong in your life that you've kind of come out of, between having cancer and being an amputee and being a victim of domestic violence. Where does that culminate now in a life motto for you, Dana? Like, what is your life motto?
My life motto, which has been, you know, quintessential to my survival, is opportunities, not obstacles. And that was really, I think, introduced to me in a very informal capacity. When I was a little girl, my parents went through a divorce when I was pretty young. My mom was pretty young when she had my brother. She was only 19. And so she didn't have, you know, a lot of background working. And we were the original latchkey kids, you know, when we started that in the, in the 80s. And so my mom had to go back to work. And I remember, you know, looking back on it, of course, as an adult, I can see what that was like. But as a kid, she just made our life so fun that we never knew that we were living off of a limited income. So every Thursday night was McDonald's night. And I mean, who doesn't want to throw down for a McDonald's meal, you know, with a Happy Meal and all of the above?
Right. What kid? Yeah, right? Who's going to say no to McDonald's?
I mean, we thought we were special because we got to go play at McDonald's every single Thursday night. And then every Tuesday night, we had breakfast for dinner, which was amazing because we got to have pancakes and waffles for dinner. Which also, who gets to do that? And now as an adult, of course, I can see that these were pretty economical choices that she was making, but it wasn't about the money for us when we were there. It was about the good time and creating that opportunity out of a perceived obstacle of a limited income. So that's where I think it really got instilled in me in the very beginning, was through my mom and just her approach to life. And I'm so grateful for that because, as you've mentioned, I think I've had plenty of opportunities to put that into practice.
I love that opportunity. Say that one more time. Opportunities over obstacles?
Opportunities, not obstacles.
Opportunities, not obstacles. I love that. That's just such a great mindset. How is that working for you right now? How do you use that on a daily basis?
I think right now, my current life, I am really recognizing the deep layers of trauma that I am beginning to work through in my recovery and my healing process. And I find myself at times becoming quite, you know, despondent at my quote unquote forward progress. And I feel like sometimes some of my setbacks that I'm having are just that, that it's a setback. But then I need to remind myself again that this is an opportunity, not an obstacle, for me to just dig deeper and discover really what that's all about. And so a good example is recently I've been struggling with some pretty significant tendonitis in my elbow and both of my hands. And upon first reflection, of course, I can blame all of that on all of my physical activity that I was doing this summer, all the backpacking and the hiking and the marathoning. But regardless, I have been doing physical therapy and things have been still not improving at the rate that I would like to see them. And so I started to dig a little bit deeper and think a little bit about more of the spiritual and the mindful things of the connectivity between my body and maybe, you know, the body keeps score. And so potentially what could this be manifesting in my journey of recovery? Absolutely. And I realized just through my reflection and meditation, I kind of had this aha moment. And I thought to myself, well, gosh, I have been stuck in this state of terror, almost, if you will, in surviving 16 years of domestic violence. And so I have been doing what everyone does when we first, you instinctively respond to fear as you clench your fists and you hold on tight and your muscles become extraordinarily contracted and you hold your breath and you become very frozen. And essentially, that's what it feels like has happened to me, is that my hands are sort of exhausted from trying to hold on and my body is exhausted from trying to hold on. And so while I do believe that the physical manifestation is in part from all of my activity, I do think that this is also another pathway to discovery for me of where some of my trauma exists, and an opportunity for me to use this perceived obstacle of a physical setback in my journey and my recovery as an opportunity to really discover the source, perhaps, of the trauma.
Yeah, I mean, you said your body keeps score, but it doesn't know the difference between going for a long hike versus protecting yourself or wanting to protect yourself. It doesn't know the difference. It just knows that your body is tensing up over and over again. So it makes perfect sense that it could be manifesting itself.
I love
that
book, The Body Keeps Score by Kolb. It's just one of the greatest go-to resources that I use, because it reminds me time and time again of the connectivity between the mind and the body. And also about the significance of meditation, because that's where, to me, the connection between those two pieces happens without you even needing to force it, because we are already so interconnected that when I meditate and I become still, I kind of take away the background noise and I get out of the Wizard of Oz spot of trying to control everything from behind the curtain, and I just rest and let that happen naturally. And that's when the connections between what I just described of me thinking, gosh, maybe this isn't all just a result of physical activity, but it's also a spiritual representation of what has been going on for me.
Yeah. And again, that makes perfect sense. And I'm happy that you bring that up as a point, because I think people forget that, right? They forget that the body keeps score. They forget that the mind and body are so connected. I know for me, I used to go, before we moved, I used to go and get regular massage therapy. And sometimes I would go and tell Lucian, I feel great. This is great. And like 6 minutes into the session, the next thing he's pressing things. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like I had no idea that this stuff was like inside of me. And there were, you know, pain points in certain parts of the body that I thought were okay. Not even close, because, you know, my mind was masking it, but the body was then saying, hey, here you go. I'm over here. Don't forget that I'm over here.
I was going to say, I think that's one of the most, you know, a poignant lesson that I've learned about complex PTSD, which folks that have experienced not just one traumatic incident, but repetitive series of traumatic incidences. And so complex PTSD is exactly what it sounds like. It's PTSD on another level. And so from a physiological standpoint, what I have learned and what I've come to understand is really what happens when we get into that moment in time where we feel like our life is in danger, and the amount of hormones that are released, the fight or flight hormones, the cortisol and the epinephrine, to get us, you know, jazzed up enough so that we can have the response that we'll need in order to fight for our lives. And in nature, if you ever watch Natural Geographic or any of those shows out there, you'll see when they do the big old, you know, the chase of the lion in the Serengeti going after the pack of gazelles. And, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, the gazelle gets away in my world. And you get to see them do this sort of wild dance afterwards. And it almost looks like they're celebrating that they didn't get eaten. But in the animal world, that's actually referred to as pronking, and P-R-O-N-K, pronking. And really what that means is that is the animal's instinct to then literally shake out and get rid of all of that toxic, you know, nervous energy that we have inside of us when we're in that fight or flight response. And as humans, we have evolved, unfortunately, out of pronking. So when something like that happens, when we have a traumatic incident, we don't necessarily then get up and run around the room like a, you know, wild gazelle celebrating that the incident is over and that we have survived it. And so that then sets us up for a repetitive deposit over time and time again of this toxic, negative, chaotic energy that gets trapped inside of our body. And that's where when we get into working with complex PTSD and trying to work through it, we have to recognize that we've got all of this energy trapped inside of us, and it's kind of going around in a, you know, turbulent tornado. And at times when we get triggered or something happens, that's when we may respond to something inappropriately with anger, or we're triggered. And it's not necessarily having anything to do with the present circumstance. It has everything to do with that residual stored energy in our body that we need to work our way back out of again. So that's where I'm at in my world.
You're working through that. Like, what works for you now? I know you marathon and you hike and you do other things, but what do you find is most helpful for you when you're feeling kind of this manifestation in your body?
I recently attended a wonderful retreat by a couple of women named Savannah and Amanda, and they have a organization called Embrace Your Wild. And it is doing therapeutic sort of spiritual work with using nature and the connectivity with nature. And in the retreat that I attended, it was a virtual retreat, and it was an amazing one. And we did this activity called an embodiment activity, where we were literally kind of doing a, not really dance, what you would think of like, you know, high school dance, but more of just body movement and allowing the energy that's within us to guide how the body wants to move. And I had never done anything like that. I think I probably as a younger person would be like, oh my gosh, look at all those hippies spinning around in circles. What are they doing? And so I'm at the point now where with the level of trauma that I've been through, right, I'm willing to try just about anything. And so I did this embodiment work with them, and it was this amazing, that's when I actually also had that connection between my mind and my body, of perhaps some of this tension that I'm feeling is all of this tension that I didn't even know was in there until I did this embodiment activity and connected with it all. So that's one that I love to do. Meditation is another one, which again is kind of the opposite of the embodiment, where you're actively engaging with the energy, and meditation is perhaps you're more of just quieting the mind and just focusing on the breath and kind of letting the connections happen while you're still. And I also am beginning to look into other things like Reiki and other types of energy work where there's touch involved. I also believe, I just had this sort of epiphany today, that because of our experience with COVID, mine in particular, because I became single just before COVID began and really had little to no human interaction for the first year of COVID, I feel like I am sort of like that adult baby that got no touch as it was being raised. And so I am beginning to realize that I really need some human touch and some energetic work to help me start to move some of this energy through my body.
Wow. You continue to be on a journey, it sounds like. When you take all of that, when you take everything that's happened up in your life up until today, right? Today we're having this conversation. What's the biggest motivator in your life right now for you?
Biggest motivator is that I am so grateful for the gift of life, and I want to pay that forward. I have been given multiple opportunities to not be here anymore. When I was 18, I had a pretty major surgery that happened, and I spent 3 months of my senior year of high school in the hospital, missed all the spring stuff. I should have died then, but if it weren't for the intervention of modern medicine. And so that was my first opportunity. And then I have had, you know, many brushes with significant challenges with my cancer. had to have my leg amputated. My ex-husband nearly killed me in that domestic violence attack. And so the fact that I am still here, I am so grateful for that. I got to witness my mother's journey with cancer, which was pancreatic cancer, and it was extraordinarily swift and very painful. And seeing what she went through, I am so grateful that I'm still here to be able to live and experience life. And so I remember my parents, and I just think about how many people I have met throughout my cancer journey and throughout my domestic violence journey who have not made it. And I feel so blessed and grateful to be here that that's what keeps me going. When I want to raise the, you know, white flag and give up, I just remind myself, this is a gift that you're here, and it is not for you to, you know, ignore or for you to take to be entitled for the gift of life. Every breath, we are never entitled to the next one. And so to be provided with the opportunity to simply just be here and experience it, whether it may be good or bad, is a gift. And so I'm grateful for that. And that keeps me going.
And I think there's, you know, probably a bunch of people listening, like, good, you know, everything that you've been through, you could certainly be sitting on the sidelines, right? But you're not. You're not. Tell the folks what you're up to now, the things that you're doing in your life now to help people move forward.
I have never been a sideliner, for sure. I mean, I was inadvertently when I wouldn't get picked for the soccer team when I was in middle school, but I still would show up.
Middle school's rough for everybody, Dana.
So, but in general, I've always just been a doer. That's who I am. And I have always been a giver. That's also who I am. And if you integrate that with my level of gratitude for the ability just to still be here, I feel very passionate about turning my pain into purpose. And so in particular, currently, I am very passionate about domestic violence because that has been my most recent trauma that I have experienced. And so that's kind of the flavor of the year for now, if you will. And I have founded a nonprofit back in 2007 called Nature's Academy. And we used to do STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math programs with K-12 students in Florida. But with the onset of COVID, that changed the landscape of that, of course, and gave me an opportunity, not an obstacle, to take a moment to step back and kind of, you know, reassess. Okay. And interestingly enough, I was ready kind of after doing this for 12 or 13 years, I was kind of ready for a new challenge myself anyway. And so we had a year during COVID and the pandemic to just kind of hit the pause button and really reflect upon what the next steps were going to be for me personally and also for Nature's Academy. And I decided to phase out the programs in Florida and focus out here in the state of Washington, which is where I live full time, and develop a new program called Unbounded Horizons. And this program is all about connections with nature and trauma healing, and using the outdoors as the vehicle to help our healing journey. And so Unbounded Horizons specifically, to start off with, will be a multi-day retreat for female survivors of domestic violence. And we hope to build the program out from being specific to domestic violence survivors of trauma to all survivors of trauma. Because at the end of the day, I think we can all say all of us that have gone through COVID and the pandemic have had some level of PTSD and trauma as we've navigated these significant changes that we've all gone through. And we could all use a way to regulate our stress on a regular basis. And literally just by stepping outside and spending 20 minutes in nature without using your phone or reading a book, you just have to be there in nature for 20 minutes. And there have been scientific studies that show that there's a reduction in your cortisol, one of those stress hormones, in just 20 minutes of being outdoors. You don't have to do anything. You don't even have to walk. You just got to go there and breathe and listen. That's all. And so to me, yeah, that's it. So to me, that is in and of itself such a beautiful way to recover from trauma. And it's been so successful for me that I want to share that with others. And so that's Unbounded Horizons. And that's one area of work that I'm doing. I also am very passionate about legislative change in the field of domestic violence. It is grossly in the dark ages still. It needs to be revamped, the entire legislative process and the penal codes that are associated with it. We really need to dig in deep and reevaluate. And also, at the same time, in order to affect those types of changes, we also need to address this systemically in society. There needs to be a perceptual change of really what domestic violence looks like. We are so focused on victim shaming and blaming, and we never find any accountability for the abuser. Perfect example is whenever you hear about someone that escapes from domestic violence, the question is always, why didn't they leave sooner? Or, you know, why did they stay for so long? And that question in and of itself is so indicative of what the societal view is of domestic violence, because that's placing all of the blame upon the victim. And where is the abuser in that question? Which the question should be, why did the person abuse that person for so long? Not why did that person stay there for so long? So that's my three arenas that I'm digging in deep into right now, bringing legislative change, domestic violence, parlayed with doing public speaking and raising awareness about the societal views of what we've got going on. And also the work that I'm doing with Unbounded Horizons and developing that program to try to help others that have experienced similar things to me.
I love, to a certain degree, maybe not love is the right word, but the connection between your three traumas and the three the three things that you're working on. There's such a great connection there, which says a lot about kind of how you can go from a trauma, move through it. Mm-hmm. Won't say move past it. You never move past it, but move through it to find a connection to make a positive change in the world. And I think that's what I appreciate most about your story, is that you're moving through it, but you're not stopping. Right? You're not stopping. You're continuing to progress in an effort to help other people.
I appreciate that. And that's really what, you know, that's what fills up my soul cup, if you will. You know, when we kind of are moving through our adulthood, and you start off, I think, in your 20s and 30s, at least my experience was, I was trying to fulfill the role that I think was laid out in front of me. I was going to go to school. I was going to get my degree. I was going to become independent and successful in my career. And I had this vision of who I was supposed to be. And I don't know if 100% of that encompassed who I wanted to be. And so I chose the who I was supposed to be, I think, out of the landscape of the choices, and it resonated with me. But once we got to, you know, your late 40s, I think this happens to all of us at some point in time, we kind of recognize our mortality, and we begin to think to ourselves, like, okay, is this going to be enough? Is this enough for me? Is this really making me feel like, if my last day were today, is this work that I'm doing the work that I would choose to do? And while I found myself very passionate about what I was doing, the introduction of cancer and becoming an amputee into my life, and my ability to participate in clinical trials and use my body as a vessel of discovery of new medicine to help others, was really my first step into this journey of being able to help people on a much larger scale than just teaching kids. Not that teaching kids is by any stretch of the imagination not a noble profession, because it is. But I felt like if I do this next level of life of doing public speaking, advocating for these causes, raising awareness for these causes, using my body as a vessel for clinical trials, I could like be saving people's lives. I mean, that's like super cool. And so I felt at that moment that that's really the work that I'm super passionate about. And I just, the path was set, and I just started following it. And here I am now in 2021. And it's exactly where I wanted to be instead of where I am supposed to be. And I don't mean I wanted to become a domestic abuse victim, but I do mean that I am so grateful for the opportunity to be doing meaningful work that provides real changes in the quality of life for others out there. And I don't know of anything better for me to be able to be doing with my perceived last day than to raise, you know, the joy level and the level of grace that others can feel for themselves.
Well, for me, Dana, it is a manifestation of what you're supposed to be doing, right? You're here for a reason. You're here to share your story. You're here to create programs for people in an effort to help them move forward as well with their lives. So you're here for a reason. I believe that 100%. I think it's important, you know, for people to hear your message and to learn more about what you're doing, because you're speaking for people who don't have a voice at the moment or don't know how to have a voice at the moment. So that's important work.
Yes, it definitely, it's difficult. It's a slog at times, but that's what also keeps me going, is that when you are doing something for a purpose that's larger than yourself, failure is not an option, right? Because it's not just you you're failing. You're failing this whole group of people that you have set out and publicly declared and made yourself accountable to, that you are going to make a difference. And I will die trying. And that's what I've said all along. And that's who I am. And that's who I will continue to be. And now that I am free and no longer in a restrictive, abusive, toxic relationship, I can truly be who I want to be now, not who I was supposed to be. And so it's really joyful and it's exciting and scary and confusing all at the same time. By no stretch of the imagination is it easy. I certainly have down days. I have had some, you know, pretty dark dates, and I have to remind myself, I'm not sure if you've heard of that poem by Rumi. It's called The Guest House. I love that poem. It's all about how our body is sort of a guest house for emotions, and we have to welcome them all. And we, as if they are all equally welcomed guests, because they all bring a message from beyond, and it's not up to us to choose which guests come to visit us. And so the sooner we can embrace the guests and let them visit and know that it truly is a guest house. That's the other portion of it, is that no emotions are permanent. Everything is transient. And so just like a guest visiting your house, it will come and it will go. And you need to remember that there's some transient nature to it. So the bad times won't last, and you can sort of rest into that as best as you can. And that's what I have been trying to do in my journey.
You know, I think it's important for people to realize people have lots of different emotions, right? They go through lots of different states in their days. They have their highs and their lows, but you're not that emotion, right? As a person, you're not that emotion. You're temporarily sad. You're temporarily mad. You're temporarily joyful, but that's not you all day, every day, right? And I think people forget that. They start to label themselves as, or they label other people even worse. Oh, that person is, you know, grumpy, or that person is unhappy, or that person is always positive. Now, there is no always in front of emotion. Right. It just doesn't happen that way. So I appreciate you bringing up that point about that.
I think the one thing that is consistent is it's not the emotions, it's the awareness of our emotions. That's what is the consistency that's always there. That's your true self, is who your awareness is, because your awareness is what's recognizing the emotion. And so like you're saying, the emotion is completely transient. It is literally our connection with our awareness, sort of as if you're a third person observer of that emotion, and you are saying to yourself, gosh, I'm feeling sad today, or I'm feeling glad today. That's the true you, who you are, not the emotion. It's the awareness of what's going on around you.
Well said. Well said, indeed. What's something simple that makes you smile? We've talked a lot about it, a lot of things, but I want to know, what's something simple that makes you smile?
The fall colors. Love them.
The fall color. You're in orange today. Nobody can see that on the podcast.
Love it. I'm a maple leaf today. So yeah, fall colors and my animals, the sound of kids laughing. I just love the sound of kids playing. It's so, they're so present in their joy. Going to the dog park makes me super joyful. Same reason, watching the dogs play. They're so present in their moment there. There's like literally nothing else except for that dog park for them. Cool breeze on my face, a nice cold IPA. There's a lot of things. I got a good list.
You do have a good list. You have a good list. So a fall day at the dog park with kids around while sipping an IPA, I think is probably, you know, the consummate of your what makes you smile.
One would refer to that as nirvana, I believe.
I love it. So you've been through a lot. You've done a lot. What's one thing that you've always wanted to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh gosh, I can't wait to get back to traveling. You know, COVID has been, it's been restrictive in that sense. And before that, I was involved in that abusive relationship where isolation and, you know, personal choice was completely absent. So I had lost my ability to travel. I'm a marine biologist by trade. And so, I mean, we never make any money, but we sure do have a lot of good stories and pictures. So I've been to places like the Galapagos and Australia, all over the Caribbean. So I can't wait to get back to being able to get out there and start exploring the world again and traveling. And, you know, there's an added level of challenge for that for me now because of my, because of the fact that I'm an amputee and mobility and, you know, accessibility is by far not even remotely close to being universal. But like everything else, I see that as an opportunity for me, not an obstacle, to just figure out, you know, how to navigate getting there. And they, it just makes the reward that much sweeter because you have to work a little bit harder.
Well, I know the Galapagos are the be-all and the end-all place to go if you're a marine biologist. But what's another place that you haven't been that you'd love to go?
Oh my gosh, I've got to go to like Tahiti or Bali. You know those places that have the little places above the water and the little fish are swimming underneath you? I mean, that's like retired marine biologist dream. You don't even need... Yeah, you don't need to get wet to go snorkeling and you can be drinking your IPA while you're watching it. So it's perfect.
I see that.
But in reality, I would love to go to the South Pacific, you know, to go diving and just check it all out.
Nice. Very nice. I love it. So you've shared a lot about your story on social media. And so one would assume people know a lot about you. But what's one thing they don't know about you?
I love love backpacking. And I have a dream that I would like to through hike the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail. And I don't say that too much publicly because it's a pretty significant walk. It's a 2,650 mile walk that is bookended by weather that will keep you from going. And so you have about a 5 to 6 month time frame to do it. And there is no way that I shouldn't say no way, never say never, but in my world of possibilities, I don't see my effort of trying to through hike the PCT as a solo effort. This is going to be a team effort, kind of when you see people who are disabled hike Kilimanjaro or, you know, summit Mount Everest or do things. There's a whole team that's with them and it's been months worth of work building that up together. And so that is my ultimate, ultimate dream of what I would love to be able to achieve and to do and to develop a community like that where we are working together for a larger goal. And of course, that would be parlayed with all kinds of awareness raising for different things, being an amputee, domestic violence, you know, all those things, cancer, rare diseases. So I have this little... dream. I really, 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 really can't wait to kind of see start to manifest. And in part, that's what I'm doing. So people might not realize that there's a very organized and strategic plan that's going on in the background. So yes, doing a marathon, 26.2 miles has been a dream of mine since before I was diagnosed with cancer and before I lost my leg. But I achieved it finally this past June 6th in 2021. And in part, part of the reason why I did that is because if you're going to, not only to fulfill the dream, of course, but if you're going to through hike the PCT, you have to, on average, do 20 miles a day. So I thought to myself, well, if you're going to commit to doing something like that, you better see if you can even do 20 miles in one day, which worked well with the marathon dream. And so that's in part kind of how NASA or the space companies, since they've been privatized, will step by step by step by step test things one at a time and build up until they're ready to do the big expedition. I am doing the exact same thing in the background. So first I did the marathon to prove to myself that I could do 20 miles a day. And then next I thought, well, I better make sure I can actually backpack, like put a backpack, not just a little day pack, like a real backpack on my back that's 20, 25 pounds. And go for a real backpacking adventure and setting up tents and doing all of these things. So I did two of those this summer as well, which again is part of my, you know, love and dream, but it's part of my step by step by step process of proving to myself that this is an attainable goal for me to set. And I'm meeting, hopefully, people along the way that will help me to build the community, that will be that team that will eventually through hike the PCT with me.
I love it. I love it. And when you say through hike, just so my, you know, my guests know, I am assuming that it means going from start to finish, right? What is that? What through hike is? I have no idea.
Yes. Yes. One forgets when they're so immersed in this world that we are speaking a foreign language at times. So yes, it means a point to point hike. And there are three pretty famous ones in the US. There's the Appalachian Trail on the East Coast. There's the Continental Divide Trail here, kind of in the middle ish. And then there's the Pacific Crest Trail. And so there are people out there, of course, you may think that I'm, you know, slightly crazy because I want to do 2,650 miles on foot, 1 foot with crutches. But there are others out there who are known as triple crowners that have done all three of them, triple crowners that have done all three of them in one season, which is like insane.
Grand slam.
There are others out there that, yes, in one season. And then there's others that have yo-yoed the trails, meaning they go, they start at one end, they reach the other side, and then they turn around and they come back all in one season. So that's the yo-yo.
Wow.
So there are some pretty intense people out there that I can then, even though it sounds like it's a crazy challenge for me, what other people have already put themselves through the test to do is such inspiration for me. And with the advent of social media, of course, now I can find them on Instagram and I can start talking with them about, you know, tips and tricks of the trade. So it's pretty exciting. It's way off in the future still, but you can see I'm step by step, I should say hop by hop, trying out my different challenges to ensure that I'm going to be ready when the day comes to start.
And I think it's great that you talk about that progress because it amplifies, you know, what I talk about on the show a lot too, is chunking things down, right? Everybody's like, oh, I'm going to do this great big thing, but they forget to break it down into simple steps. So I appreciate that you, you know, say that in order to reach a really big goal, you have to chunk it down. And I know people may be listening and say, well, Jay, she just said she ran a marathon. That's not chunking anything. Well, when you want to do 2,000 miles, it is chunking. Just keep it in mind, the context.
And it took me 21 years to run the marathon and or to hop the marathon. That was something I set out to do when I in 1999-ish. Wow. And it was in 2021 when I actually finally accomplished it. So by no stretch of the imagination did I just wake up one day and say, I think I might do a marathon.
It's been out there.
It's been out there.
It's been a manifestation for a while.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, definitely.
Dana, I have so enjoyed speaking to you. I know it, your story and the work that you're doing is going to resonate with my audience. If people want to find you online, where can they find you?
I have hopefully a pretty memorable handle on my social channels on Facebook and Instagram, which are my two primary places. That is at Hoppy, just like me, H-O-P-P-Y, Hiker, P-N-W for the Pacific Northwest, because that's where I'm at. So it's at Hoppy Hiker, PNW. And then I also have a website. I do a lot of blogging and I do public speaking. And so that's a great place to kind of find out a little bit more about me and the services that I provide. And that's just my name, dana-lawson.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dana. I really appreciate you being here today.
Thanks, Jay, for having me. I really appreciate it. And it's been great chatting with you. And I love chatting with fellow super positive people and grateful people. We got to always, you can feel the energy flow, even though we're, you know, virtual and, you know, we're not in person, but you can still feel it. So I really appreciate that. I'm really grateful
for
you.
Well, thank you. And I know at some point our paths will cross in person.
You know what? They've got some good IPAs over there in Massachusetts.
That's right.
I've heard, so I might need to take an adventure.
That's right. That's right. And the Berkshires are not a bad, you know, mountain to climb either. So.
So I've seen, yes, I've seen some pictures.
Thank you, Dana.
Thanks, Jay. Have a good afternoon.
Here are the three things I learned from my conversation with Dana today. No matter your circumstances, you have the ability to persevere. Don't forget, our bodies quietly keep score of what they experience daily. And finally, sometimes we have to turn our pain into purpose. If you liked today's episode with Dana Lawson, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen. And please share this episode, as word of mouth is the way this show's message grows. And finally, as I close every show, Thank you for being here today, my friends. Your gift of time listening to this show does mean the world to me. And as always, be well, be happy, be you. And until the next time, may your quest for positivity begin today.
Every breath, we are never entitled to the next one. And so to be provided with the opportunity to simply just be here and experience it, whether it may be good or bad, is a gift. And so I'm grateful for that. And that keeps me going.
For more on my positivity quest, follow me at @JAYRamsden on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like today's episode, please give us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app or visit podchaser.com and search for Positivity on Fire. Positivity on Fire is a production of Impact One Media, LLC. All rights reserved.